Hey, everybody, we're here live, Testimony House, Pinecone Studios, New John Simmons here with Anna and Pastor Mike. How you guys doing?
Good.
Right. We're new friends here.
We yes, are.
Literally.
Yeah, literally, just met a few minutes ago, man. Yes. You guys have some awesome stories that we're going to get into all that. You guys are from St. Louis, though, right?
Yes, I
am. She's originally from St. Louis. I'm originally from Belleville, East St. Louis area.
What's that? Belleville, Illinois. How'd you guys meet?
Yep.
Outreach, actually.
She was a volunteer. We have a ministry called Men Standing Positive. Been doing it for 15 years. I'll get into a little bit of that as well, if need be. But she was a volunteer for one of the outreaches.
Mm-hmm. Yep. In 2011.
Oh, you guys have been together for a minute then. 12 years, huh?
Yeah.
When'd you guys get married?
2017.
We dated for 4 years.
We
though.
Did.
Like when I, you know, when we met on outreach, it's not like, you know, we knew or something. It took a while to figure this out. So,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So, you guys were both saved when you met, right?
Sounds
like, yeah.
Yeah.
You got saved when you were little. What happened? Give me your salvation story real quick.
You want to go first?
I can. Yes, for sure. Okay. So I actually got saved when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
There was just a lot going on in my life. My grandmother and my aunt had just died the prior year in the same month. I was in seventh grade. You know, all the stuff that goes on in junior high. And I was just literally at the end of my junior high self. And I cried out to God in my bedroom. I was like, God, I need you. Help me. So I literally let everything go. And his peace just entered my heart in that moment. I'll never forget it. I was raised in church, but I didn't actually accept him till I was a teenager.
Yeah, so. I remember, you know, as a teenager, because I grew up in a little Baptist church. My grandma would pick me up on Sundays. And she would take me. I never really got it, although I did get baptized, you know, because my friends all got baptized, you know. Mm-hmm. But I remember those prayers, those first prayers. They were like, answer. Just ask God anything you want. He answers prayers and all this stuff. And so for me, those first couple prayers, I was asking for like, hey, can you give me the new Green Day CD? Or can you help me with, you know, like my prayers were very like this kind of level. And so I was not experiencing that at that moment. So you were a teenager and you're like, God, I need you.
Yes.
I need you.
Well, and part of it was my mom was very sick when I was growing up. And so I was dealing with all of that. And then the family members had died. It was just a lot going on.
Yeah. So after all that happens, you're born again.
Mm-hmm.
How's the growth from there? Like, does he help you get over that? How's the grief? How do you work through all that?
During that time, I definitely sought him and I started following him. But shortly after that, probably a couple years later, I actually strayed away from him for probably 8 to 10 years.
Oh,
and I had to rededicate my life to God when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
So it was like a whole, I was with him and then I left him and then I came back. And ever since then, I've been with him.
Yeah.
So
what was the runoff for?
Rebellion.
Yeah.
Wanting to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. Just teenager rebellion. You know, didn't like mom and dad's rules, all those sort of things. And I was like, well, I'm going to do this, this, and this, choose my own way. And I went with it. So, yeah.
Well, what you, how'd you get born again?
So I actually have like no church background
really
whatsoever. I grew up, with the typical story of drugs and alcohol addiction, things like that. No father. And I actually got born again in my bedroom watching a television show.
Which one?
It's called Six. It's actually, well, not a television show. It's a movie, Six. It's called Six. It's about Revelation. But my grandmother called my mom and was like, hey, tell Michael to turn on this television station. At the time, I was doing drugs. I had drugs on the table.
Yeah.
I was living the lifestyle of a young man's dream, I guess you could say. And the Holy Spirit came in the room with me. No pastor, no preacher. Nothing like that. Holy Spirit came in a room that night while I was watching that movie, and God said to me, he said, hey, if you give your life to me and allow me to take you through the process of changing your life, I will satisfy you more than all of these things. More than him, what he was talking about is the drugs, the alcohol. Because see, I wouldn't hit rock bottom yet.
Okay.
With, you know, I don't have a rock bottom testimony. You know, it was, everything was so-called going good, I guess you could say, right? And so he said, I will satisfy you more than the women, the drugs, the music stuff. I was on my way to signing some record deals and all kinds
really?
Of stuff. Yeah. And it's like, he said, I will satisfy you more than all of these things. And I can say now today, long story short, that God has definitely proved that.
Yeah. Bring that mic closer to your mouth for me. And so God shows up in your bedroom watching this movie. See, now that sounds like a really nice thing. You've been a Christian for a minute now. You tell that story a lot of times, I bet, right? But in my mind, I'm like, that had to be a little freaky.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't just like this easy thing to walk through in that moment, right?
No. I was addicted to drugs and alcohol. And like I said, like I tell this story, my father, he he was addicted to drugs for a long period of time as well. And he went to a park one day, kneeled down and prayed to God and said, "Hey God, can you take this away?" And God did that. That was not my story. It took me 5 years. God took me through a process of recovery, of overcoming drugs and alcohol. 5 years I was addicted. And the reason why he did that is because he called me to help so many others out. When you go into a crowd of people that are dealing with these kinds of things, the majority has to go through the process. The majority does not have the testimony of, "Hey, God just took it away." You know, the majority has to go through, and that's who, that's what God has called me to. He's called me to those people.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely an interesting group to meet. You know, I'm a former addict, so I was addicted for 10 years gambling. I lost $500,000 while I was in my addiction. Poker was my start, and then we got into doing sports betting. And so although it's a different type of addiction than what you were dealing with.
It's an addiction, though.
And so I've been around, and I worked in a casino for a long time, so I've been around people who have dealt with this at the highest highs and then once a year slot players and this kind of thing. So I understand the type of mindset that goes behind somebody who's really doing something can't stop, and how God will send people to minister to those types of people because they really need a specific type of person in their life. Someone who understands what they're going through, someone who can speak their language. Because for me, I don't know how, if it was like this for you or not, but when I was in addiction and I wasn't born again, but everybody in my life was like, "Why don't you just stop it? Why don't you just quit? Right. You know, just figure it out. Like, it's just, it's hurting you." You know? And so, and my answer was like, "Well, I can't." You know, and first off, I wouldn't even tell them I was addicted, right? I would be like, "I ain't got no problem. I'm fine. You know, I'm a jackpot away from you envying my life and the millions of dollars that I have in my bank account, you know?" Because to me, it wasn't this thing that was like stopping me from working. It wasn't preventing me from doing anything in the natural. I was just didn't have any money. Or sometimes I had a lot of money, you know, it depends on the week, right? So for you, when you're in that life, what were the people around you? Did they have a experience with God, or was it just like, "We're just doing"?
No, not at first. Honestly, like all my I was the ringleader of my friends.
Really?
I was the ringleader of my friends. And so I had to change all of that. God said, "You need to leave your friends," because every time I would go hang out with them, I would fall back into what they were doing with the pimp mindset and the women and things like that and all of the drugs. And God was like, "You need to leave your friends." And I was like, "God, what am I going to do?" You know, the only person that I had in my life that could help me was my grandma. And my grandma was an alcoholic. She just gave her life to the Lord maybe a few years before I gave mine, you know. And it's like I had nobody to relate to but my grandma, you know. So I had no friends. Well, I left my friends for 2 years, okay. That's all God said, too, by the way. He said, he was just like, "Leave them. Leave your friends.
Yeah.
Leave everything." What I didn't know is that he was going to strengthen me. And once he strengthened me and I got strong and I got free from everything, he sent me back and I was able to lead all my friends to Christ.
Well, that's awesome. I have had an opposite effect on my friends. I think that makes them want to run further away. So when I got born again, I'm working at a casino, right? And there, Jesus is nowhere near my friend group. You know, I had one Christian friend who worked with me that I knew who was a Christian. He would talk about Jesus. My skin would crawl a little bit whenever he talked about him. But he's my best friend now. He does the ministry with me. Anyway, everybody else besides him was just like, "Quit talking about Jesus." We had a Thanksgiving friend group after I got born again. They put a sign on the door that said, "There will be no talking about Jesus at today's event."
I mean, because I was talking
about it after I got born again. I was like, "You gotta get saved. You gotta get saved." Come on. You know, and I'm trying to do all this with them, and they're just like leaving me. But what I realized pretty soon on, and you probably experienced this because you mentioned walking in your past, like when Christ shows up in your life. And you have to have a change of heart. You got to get in a new direction. You got to go somewhere new.
Yeah.
And you got to leave behind the things you used to do.
That's
especially
right.
The drugs or the gambling or whatever it is. Yeah. If you're in that kind of lifestyle, that means your friend group. Because if you hang out with them too long, I found myself saying words I didn't want to say, drinking beers I didn't want to drink.
Yep.
You know, I wasn't necessarily gambling, but the idea was there. They were tempting me, you know. And so at some point I had to be like, "God, can I hang out with these people anymore?"
Yeah.
And he was like, "Yeah, you should probably walk away from those folks." And I had to. And it was a very tough decision. Now, I still see them on Facebook and this kind of thing. I remember one of them said, he was like, "If John's still saved in a year," because they all thought it was like a trick. Like I was just like,
that's the way it was for me too.
Like there, it was just another coping mechanism to like try and get some money out of some people or try and figure out, you know, he's going to fall back into that. Well, 10, 12 years later, I'm still sober. I don't know. I guess Jesus did something, you know.
Amen.
But I remember one of them was like, "If John's still saved in a year, I'll get saved." you know, we're still waiting on that payback. But yeah. So did you give up everybody? You get them saved. Now they're all hanging out, right?
Well, we served in ministry together for a period of time. We don't really serve much anymore. My surroundings have changed a lot since then. But yeah, when I led them all to Christ, yeah, we served in ministry for a period of time.
Yeah, that is crazy, man. I can't imagine what it's like to lead people you grew up with or hung out with all the time to Jesus, because I haven't had a lot of that. Like, you can lead people to the Lord. I don't know. I can talk to all sorts of gambling addicts and all this kind of stuff, but the people that I spent a lot of time with, they're still unsaved. And I still pray for them. I'm hoping that God turns them around, waiting for the phone call one day. John, I had an encounter with Jesus last night. We you know, and have all these questions and this and that, you know, but it's been different.
It was a rough process. It was a rough process. 'Cause when I came back and they kept trying to test me, like, okay, hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And I was like, no, I'm not doing that no more. They thought I was judgmental.
Yeah.
So it was a process. Yeah. It was a process of them seeing my life, seeing that I was really living that. And then I would go after them. I did. I went after them. I went in places and found them, and I was calling them all the time. I was there for them. I was praying for them. And so that's when one by one they got, I led them to Christ.
Yeah. That's awesome. So, Anna, did you know him while he was like this?
Or,
No. You met afterwards. Like, when he describes this, because my wife's the same way. So I'm married 9 years now. And
congratulations.
Thank you. So she was the opposite of me in every way. Mm. She was sheltered, grew up in church her whole life, got born again, filled with spirit 5 years old. You know, I'm the opposite of that. She'd never seen an R-rated movie. I'm of the world. Like, she's 8 years younger than me. Like, we were two different worlds colliding, but God put us together. Mm-hmm. And so when she hears me talk about my old life and stuff, she feels like it's just like a movie or something. She's like, I don't know who you're talking about. Amen. Like, I've never met that guy. And so that's like,
I have seen a few old pictures of him from high school or maybe when he was a kid, especially the high school ones. And I looked at them and I'm like, I know that's you. But it's just the look on his face and his eyes, it's totally different. I met him, and he was a man of God. And I was still – when I first met him, I wasn't fully following God yet. That's the thing. It took me a couple years after knowing him that God got a hold of me.
Yeah, so interesting. So let's talk about that. So you guys said you met sort of in the mission field or whatever you guys – and so – but you said you weren't on fire for God. What happened? Because you said you were a rebellion. How'd you get back in the church if you weren't on fire yet?
So that's when God was starting to pull me back, because I was starting to realize that, and I was tired of living my own way, because I was seeing what I was doing. I wasn't satisfied. I was unhappy. It was just everything I was doing, whether it was alcohol, whether it was dating the wrong guys, I was trying to feed something that wasn't able to get that satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And so when I met him, I was on that path of going back to where I came from, which was serving God. And so when I met him, I was trying to become a woman of God, but I wasn't fully there yet. It took a couple of years. So, and I finally one day, it was in 2012, I made a really dumb decision. I was like, I am done living this way. I am done. And so I made that choice. And then a year or two later, I actually started serving in ministry with him for real at that point. So it took me like 4 years to actually come back to God, because I kept going back to the world, come back to God, go back to the world. It was like this roller coaster. And I finally realized, I need to stop this. This will never satisfy me. Only he will.
So how did you do? What's that look like practically for you?
Not answering phone calls from guys.
Okay.
Not drinking, stopping to drink, all of those things.
Was that easy?
No, it was hard, because I would get, once I made that decision of I'm following God, I'm serving him, I would get texts and phone calls. Hey, what are you doing? How's it going? And it's, you know, been someone I hadn't talked to in a year. Just, it was a very intentional decision to say no.
Yeah.
And it was rough at first because my worth was in attention that I got. It wasn't in God. And I had to get to the place through that intentional decision over and over again of no, I'm not going back. So it was rough.
A lot of tears when you have to give up sin, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was tough for me. I remember when, because I gambled for 6 months, give or take, after I got born again. And I'm just like, God, take this away from me. You know, it's the whole point. I got born again. I needed this hope and a future for my life. And there was tears, man, when all my friends would go to the casino and I'm not going with them. I'm making the decision. Like you said, you just got to stop. You got to stop. I got to stop doing this. Mm-hmm. I really want to. I got a couple dollars, you know, but those tears would start coming out, and like the killing that flesh is tough.
Yeah.
And I think that some people, maybe when you talk about ministering to people, like they don't realize that like it's so much worth it on the other side. You think that like those tears, like you're just so like, why would I ever stop doing this? It's so much fun. I get so much enjoyment out of it. I get so much peace. You know, it's like, is it really peace? Because I've experienced peace on the other side of Jesus, and I know what it's like to have a life where it's like, I care less about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But walking through it, when you have to walk through and give stuff up, that's a sacrifice. That is, in this take what you want now world and get whatever you want and be as happy as you want and do whatever it takes to make yourself happy, that's difficult.
Yeah.
So I appreciate hearing a story where somebody's like, I had to stop.
I did. I said to stop. I had to make a decision.
Yeah.
I had to do it.
And so step by step, it was sort of like sanctification then sounds like for you. Yeah.
It's definitely a process. Cause like I said, I would be good for a few months and then fall back in and come in and out. And then I just made a decision. I slept with someone one night cause I got drunk and I was like, nope, I got to stop.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. And so you guys meet and you kick it off right away or what?
No way.
Mm-mm. No. Oh, really?
No way.
No.
No, it was strictly business, man.
It was
just Jesus. And
yeah.
No sunshine, huh?
It was.
No. What was that? No.
The way you guys are saying it makes it sound like there's a story there.
Oh, yeah, yes. There is a story. Okay. We might have to come back for a whole nother show.
Oh.
But I just want to say that we have a terrible dating experience.
Oh, really?
It was. You know how people are like, oh, let's go back to when we were dating. We're like, no. No. Mm-mm. No. It was rough. It was very rough. A lot of attacks coming from ourselves. We went through 2 years of premarital counseling.
Yeah.
Hey. 2 years of premarital counseling. And I'm not talking about, you know, every 4 or 5 months. No, I'm talking once a week, 2 years.
Interesting. This is the first time I've encountered a couple like this. So I have lots of questions now. This is
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it doesn't sound like you want to talk about it, but I do. So
okay, go ahead. Hey, no, I'm fine.
We'll talk about it. Yeah.
This
is going to bless somebody. So, I think first off, I will say this: premarital counseling is the most greatest thing any couple who's about to get married can do.
Yeah,
my wife went through.
Totally
it.
Agree.
You gotta unpack all your baggage if you have any, and then you gotta talk about the future. How many kids are we gonna have? Where are we gonna live? Mm-hmm. What are we gonna do with our in-laws? Where are we going to holiday? You gotta have to have conversations about things so that you know you're in agreement before you say I do on things. And so that's why I appreciate premarital counseling. But what's it like when y'all are dating and you're having to fight through it? Because it sounds like that's what's happening. For 2 years, you guys were trying to really work some stuff out.
Mm-hmm. So I want to say this, that the 5 years of going through that process of God setting me free from the drugs and the addiction, I always say when you're addicted to something, freedom seems like something that's going to happen in the millennial kingdom or something.
Yeah,
the next life. No, I'm never getting free. Like, even though I'm going after that, it's never going to happen. Yeah. Like, it seems impossible. It really does. When you're addicted to something, it seems impossible. Right. Yeah, you know? But I can say that even though I've been through all of that stuff, I always tell people the heart issues that I have, because all addictions I have were surface level. You know? Cocaine was not a deep-rooted issue. Alcohol was not a deep-rooted issue. Smoking marijuana every day, all day, was not a deep-rooted issue. The heart issues I had, though, that caused me to do those things, that covered all of that up, those were the deep-rooted issues. And I got to say, the process of going, the process that God had to take me through to overcome a lot of those things was way greater than the addiction, even. And that's stuff I still had to deal with even before I got married to my wife. Mm-hmm. I brought that. Like, I waited for her for 8 years. Okay. And in that 8 years, I was growing in the Lord. I was doing things right, but I had no idea. I still had all of these deep rooted issues that I didn't even know was there.
Yeah.
And counseling brought that stuff out, and it does. It'll make you want to use. It'll make you want to go back to that lifestyle. Okay. And so that's why I tell people all the time is, man, you may not have an addiction. You may not ever done drugs or something like that. But, man, we are dealing with heart issues. And the last thing we really want to do is give our heart to a God that's going to take out a magnifying glass on that mug.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Because when he takes out that magnifying glass, you have to trust him to expose those issues. And it hurts. It does. You're taking that stuff up that you've put down that you didn't even know was there. You thought you hid that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's got to surface. God can only refine us if we allow those things to surface. You know, he can't do nothing about it. And that's what was happening in our premarital counseling.
So you had worked through some of that stuff on your own prior to premarital, or did all this start to come to the surface in that?
I wouldn't say all of it, but a lot of it came to the surface right before we got married in premarital counseling.
And so what was that like, Anna, to hear, you know, the struggles that he was going through, or see the, you know, like you said, like maybe you were getting drawn back into that world because you're just mentally going through things in your mind that were in the past, but now it's like, I need to deal with this. The only thing I can think of is maybe smoke a blunt or whatever. You know, it's like, oh, how do you, what was it like?
It was really rough, honestly, but I had, at that time, I had to realize that I was also going through my things. Yeah. And the biggest thing when we were, one of the biggest things that we were learning in premarital counseling was to fight fair. Mm-hmm. And fight, don't fight each other.
Yeah.
And so his stuff was coming to the surface. My stuff was coming to the surface. And it was interesting because what God was healing in him, God also had to heal in me. So if we were fighting each other, we weren't able to heal. And mm-hmm. it's when we fought the right way,
yeah.
We actually were able to get through it. So if my focus was off, then it was horrible for me. But if my focus was where it needed to be, on God and dealing with this, it was way better.
What did it look like for you guys to, like I said practically before, but like, what are the steps you have to take to heal? Because there's people out there who need healing, you know? Mm-hmm. So you guys are going through your traumas essentially, right?
So number one is allow God to bring it to the surface. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like from what I've seen, we do counseling too and discipleship as well. People don't want to deal. They don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want it to surface. No, I want to keep sweeping that under the rug.
Yeah.
That is the first step of allowing God to bring it to the surface. Yeah. Because when you don't know how to deal with something, I don't want it in front of me. I don't know how to deal with this bottle. So what do? I hide
it. Yeah, okay.
I hide it. So, uh-oh, there it is again. Well, guess what? Just because I brought it out and I'm leaving it there doesn't mean I know how to deal with it. Still, no.
Yeah.
I have to patiently allow God to show me how to deal with this.
All right. Okay.
Until I have to leave it there, though. I can't. If I take it away, I got to start that process over again. So I have to leave it there. The pain that I have to deal with, you know, I have to keep that pain right there before me. And I have to seek God diligently, ask him, Lord, what do you want me to do about this? What do you want me to do about this? And I have to admit it. I have to admit it. I have to be open and honest about this thing that is out in the open. Then God can come and he can take care of it. But until I allow God to bring that thing out and keep it there in front of me, and I pursue him diligently on how to deal with it, I'm never going to get over
it. So what steps did you guys take to deal with the, you know, the things on the table?
Prayer, talking about it, anything that, I think talking between us was the biggest deal and working it out. I had come from a background of not talking about things and shoving things down so you blow up, you know, at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And so him and I, in, like, together, it'd be talking amongst each other about it. And then anything, individual action that I needed to take with somebody else, him probably with somebody else, that would be the second practical thing. But just talking about it, praying about it, and then repenting to God.
Yeah, changing the behavior.
Changing the behavior. That,
So if I'm, because of the heart issues, we have behaviors because of the heart issues. Mm-hmm. And so we had to change the behavior. So that means I have to pay attention to the behavior patterns that I have and how I may be treating her, because I would treat her a certain, I was beginning to treat her a certain way based off of what I've went through in my past.
Okay.
In past relationships, she did the same thing.
Yes, I did.
We had to heal from that. We had to heal from that. So it had to been right. It had to be right out there in front of us.
Yeah, you sort of had to like relearn how to do some things the right way, God's way.
Mm-hmm. Or,
yeah, it sounds like
Yeah, it was rough, man. Yeah, I'll be honest with you, it was very rough. But it gave us the platform that we have today of counseling other people, because we'll counsel couples that have been married for 30, 40 years, and we have only been married for 7 years.
Yeah,
and it's the reason why is it's because of what we went through.
Yeah.
And how to get through that. I mean, you can do something wrong for 50 years.
Yeah, well, you can't get a testimony without a test. We've all heard that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, your story of being able to walk through that helps other people. It blesses other people.
Yes.
So, man, so you guys walk down the aisle. Man, that's awesome. And talk about having some stories. Man, you guys got a lot of stories now. So let's talk a little bit about what you guys have done recently and what God has healed you of. And so tell me a little bit. You said you had a church or something in town right now?
No, not in town. We're going to be planting a church. God has called us to plant a church in St. Louis.
Okay.
But he has not given us an exact date. He's told us to be traveling missionaries for a period of time.
Okay.
He called us to plant a church. When was it exactly? A
couple of years ago at this point.
So, I wanted nothing to do. I've been doing inner city ministries and helping churches with street evangelism.
Okay.
And we do a mentor program. We help people get jobs and get off the streets, homeless people get off the streets and things like that. I've been doing that for 15 years. That's where it's through the ministry of Men Standing Positive where I met her. And God called me. He's been calling me for probably 6 or 7 years to start the process of planting a church and doing discipleship. I didn't know the discipleship process. I knew the church thing, but I was like, no, I don't want to do this. I was like, there's a church on every corner. Let them do it. You know, if anything, I will help them. Because that's what I was doing. I was helping churches. And so basically what happened is the Lord was like, hey, you either do this or I'm going to stop talking to you. And that's exactly what happened. She didn't want to plant a church either. Nope. We didn't want to hear about it. We didn't want to talk about it. Forget so it. He stopped talking. He stopped talking to the point to where we was doing everything in our own strength. See, you can't do stuff in your own strength in the ministry. You can't do that. God's got to be in it, right? Amen. And so basically we was like, okay, we got to fast. Okay. We've got to fast and we've got to pray. So we ended up fasting. We told the Lord this time, we said, okay, Lord, we're going to fast and we're going to pray, but we're not going to give an end date. You tell us when we're going to stop fasting. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up fasting for like a month and a half. Wow. And at the end of the fast, let me say this. During the fast, God didn't say a word to us. Did not say a word. I'm talking, if we wasn't mature in our walk with God, we would have left God. Because it seemed like he didn't exist. I mean, we got up every morning praying. You know, we wouldn't watch no movies, no social media, just eating fruits, vegetables, and water. That's it. Okay. And so we didn't hear nothing from God. Well, at the end of the fast, God started speaking to us, and he started speaking to us in a way like never before. Yes.
These stories. Yeah. All right.
I mean, like never before, man.
I thought we were going nuts.
It took us months to actually believe it.
Yeah.
Like if people say, oh, you know, was amazing he spoke and we did. No, dude, it was so crazy how he was speaking to us. It took us months, and he was even saying, I know this is unusual, but it's me.
First off, isn't every story in the Bible where God's talking to somebody unusual? We got a bush, right?
For sure. Yes.
and how he's talking to us is just like the Bible.
It's
a spoken word, but it lines right up. Everything he's spoken to us lines right up with the written word of God. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is he said to us in this word, he said, first of all, obey me. And because we had to start obeying him and start the process of planting the church, which we already did, but we really did this time.
Okay.
And we started that process. What we didn't know is that God had this discipleship program. We had no idea. Okay. We just heard plant a church.
Yeah.
We had no idea about this discipleship program that he's called us to build. Okay. And so, well, in that same word, he said, you are going to give everything in this house away. You're going to give your place away and everything in it.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. This is what he says. I'm like, okay, well, you know, that's cool.
I was mad.
No kidding.
I was mad.
Not many stories start with God told me to give away everything. I mean, I've heard it in the Bible. He said, go give away everything, you know, and it said harder to go through the eye of a needle than to give away everything.
Young ruler.
But here you are being asked that.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, Jesus actually asked every single disciple, all 12 disciples, to do that, and they all did it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what Jesus, you're talking about the rich young ruler, that's in all the Gospels, but the one that I like the most is in Luke, his account. But when he says to the rich young ruler, hey, go and give everything and then come back and follow me, it's actually in a command. Because the rich young ruler comes to Jesus, says, hey, I followed all of your commandments since I was a kid.
Yeah.
What must I do to inherit eternal life? Yeah. This is where it really gets deep. He didn't say, hey, what must I do to be somewhat of a Christian or just follow you? No, he says, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, well, you must obey the commandments. He goes straight to this man's heart. The man interrupts him and says, well, I've obeyed all of these since I was a kid. And then Jesus says, well, there's one you still have not obeyed, and it's the very one that I'm about to tell you. He said, now go and sell everything to the poor, and then give, and then come and follow me. Well, where in the Ten Commandments does it say give everything to the poor? Well, let's take it even further. The 600-some-odd commandments of the Mosaic law. Never. It says that. What it is when King Jesus commands us to do something, when he commands Mike, Anna, plant a church, and I disobey it, I am disobeying his commands because he's a king. Whatever he speaks and says do, I've got to do. You see what I mean?
Absolutely.
And people look at that story of the rich young ruler like, oh man, that's crazy, rich man. Matthew was rich. He was a rich man. Matthew actually did what the rich young ruler didn't. So Jesus called all of his disciples to get to a place to where we're willing to walk away from everything. And this is what God was trying to show us. Because I could read that. I could teach that in the Bible and, you know, look at the Greek and the Hebrew. But, okay, can I do what this says? Mm-hmm. And so that's what was literally happening. God was starting that journey, that process of us doing this. Because when she heard that, she might have been mad. But then after a while, she started coming on board. She obeyed. She obeyed to the point to where I was like, no, take that stuff out of that box, because there were certain things we was supposed to take.
Yes.
Okay.
But she's like, everything's going. He said everything, we're getting
pretty much everything. Yeah, pretty much everything. I mean, it was little stuff that but I was even like, no, don't even pack that. I was like, no, I'm not doing this.
So back
we got an argument.
Oh no, yes. No kidding. So I want to walk through what this looks like. Okay. Cause this is a big testimony that I don't get to talk about ever. Selling everything. Right. So
we didn't sell. We gave it away. Okay, we did not sell.
Even better. Giving everything away.
Yes.
What's the first conversation like? Because who heard it first?
She did.
She heard to sell everything. And okay. Yes. And so she brings it to the kitchen table. Mike, I got something to tell you. God told me we got to sell everything in the house.
Yes.
I'm not laughing. I'm like, it's so exciting. Like, it's just like, yes. And so you say what?
Okay. Now, you got to understand, I've kind of done something like this before, so I'm not ignorant of giving everything away.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But it's different when you're married. Mm-hmm. Let me back up for a second. Here's the thing, just because we have time and you're okay with that. So I hate to say this, but there was a lot of people that disagree with Ann and I getting married. Okay. And one of the things was, will Mike take care of her? Will I take care of her? Will we be out on the street? You know, begging and things like that. This is one of the things that people thought. Well, that was so far from the truth. We were proving all of those people wrong. So the thought of me giving up everything and not having a house, not having that security that we've built.
Right.
And we had a really nice place, dude. Just everything was nice. Like anybody that walked in her house was like, dude, this place is amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the way it was for everybody. So it was like to give up all of that, I was like, no. It wasn't so much as the stuff. It was more of I was proud to say, look at what we have done.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so that's what was very rough for me. So I was like, no, we're not doing this. I didn't, and I was still trying to figure out that she was literally hearing from God, because God gave her the word.
He did.
God gave her the word. And that's something, little note of to men, is you can pray for your wife and grow your wife and train her by the word of God, you know, in Ephesians, you know, wash her by the reading of the word of God. But then, dude, like when God grows your wife and he gets her to the place to where, you know, she can add to your guys' situation. You got to let that happen. Uh-huh. Well, that was hard for me.
Yeah.
It was hard for me to believe that, okay, God is speaking through my wife on this level. So.
It was shocking. I originally was upset because I was very attached to things. Not because I needed a lot of things or expensive things. It was the sentiment of the things. Where did they come from? Oh, that's from grandma. Or that was a wedding present. Or, hey, I worked for years at my job to buy that. So for me, giving everything up, I was upset at first because it's like, Lord, I'm not giving up my kitchen stuff that I've been collecting since I was 16.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not giving up my grandparents' furniture that he refinished and it looked beautiful.
Yeah.
It was the sentiment of things. And God said, this stuff is not yours. It's mine. I gave it to your family. That's why they had it in the first place. So. Yeah. It's time to go and give to the next person.
We was dealing with different things too. Yes. We really were. It's like, because here's another thing. She gets another word. Now, this is after we've already had the argument. No, put the stuff back up. We're not going. I don't know if this is real. She gets another word, okay? And in the word, there's multiple different things, but she gets in a word that, hey, she comes back to bed, and I'm about to go to sleep. And she's like, hey, I got another word from God. I want you to hear this. And she's like, hey, God said this, that there's going to be a time to where we're going to live with my parents. And I said, I am done.
Ah.
Okay.
Not the in-laws.
Yeah. Now, it's a pride thing.
Sure, of course
me.
It
like,
is. Yeah.
Bro, I would have rather.
They were worried about you not being able to take care of her, and then you got to go back to their house and live under the looks and all that. I get it, man.
Yeah.
as a gambling addict, me and my wife went through the same thing. We're like, he's only been born again a little bit. He still might gamble. Aren't you worried that he's going to take everything in the bank account and throw it down the, you know? So yeah. I know what that's like.
Yeah. So what happened was, is I was like, no, I was like, I'm done. I'm not hearing this. I said, that will never happen. We'll never have to do that. I will never let that happen. And I kind of rebuked my wife, you know. Well, I wasn't finished. I ended up getting up out of bed. I mean, I was literally about to go to sleep. I got up out of bed, went in the living room, and told God. I said, Lord, this would never happen. I said, I need you to help Anna because she's hearing wrong. So please help her. Okay, like literally, I was like, no, I did not believe. Like I said, I would have rather got hit by a car than that happen. Okay, because I didn't want that to happen whatsoever. And so it came to the point to where literally I was not hearing from God again because I stopped obeying him. What happened was, is we would know when we were disobeying God because he would stop talking. Mm-hmm. Like literally he was like, hey, do this. And if we didn't do it, he wouldn't say anything else, you know? And we couldn't handle it. We just had to hear what he had to say, you know? And so what happened was, is I got to the point I was like, all right, I can't do this no more. And I got up, I ended up getting up and I went down the hallway and God said to me, he said, you need to give everything away. Leave now. And I was like, wow. And I told Anna, I was like, okay, I'm about to do this. And once I do, everything is over with. And that's when, because a couple months before that, we met a pastor in Minnesota, and we were planting a church through the AG at the time. And through the AG, you're supposed to serve in a church for a period of time. And so they said, hey, if you're ever in this area, we will take care of you. You know, you can come and serve in our church, you know, because this church in Minnesota was set up just like how Men Standing Positive was here in St. Louis. Like, there's no church in this area like this church in Minnesota. I mean, it's amazing. Like, okay. There's 350 people in the church every Sunday. Well, here's the deal. They're all addicts. They're all addicts going through the process of recovery. It's kind of amazing. It really is, bro. And so the thing is, I called the pastor and I'm hoping that the pastor's going to be like, oh, nah, you know, I know we talked, you know, cause I haven't talked to this guy. I talked to him one time. You know what I mean? So I'm hoping he's like, no, you know, I don't think that's going to work. You know, that was just something we was kind of talking, you know. That's what I'm hoping, so I don't have to move on any of this. So I call him up, and he's like, you know what, man? I got a place here, a little studio apartment, that somebody just canceled their lease. It's available. You can come out. We'll give you 2 weeks evaluation, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. I was like, man. So, boom, everything started happening. Literally, I was on the – we didn't know who was going to give our stuff to, but God told us we was going to give it to the next person that was going to live there. Mm-hmm. And that we had a member in our church that was in the St. Louis flood, and God was like, give everything to her. It took her forever to figure – like, she didn't believe it. It was hard for her to believe, you know, but gave everything to her. We packed our bags. Mm-hmm. Literally, we had bags, put everything in a car, and left and got on the road to Minnesota in November. Mm-hmm. And it was last year. Freezing. I mean, dude, that place is for real.
It's cold.
Yeah, it's movie cold there, dude. Like, you only see that stuff on the movies, man. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
So you moved to Minnesota.
Yes.
Oh. And the tryout, is it a tryout? What, I mean, like, did you have expectations that you would make it past 2 weeks?
We knew we believed we would. They just didn't know us like that. Yeah. So they said, you have 2 weeks to prove yourself. Because we came in under, like, their staff and worked 40, 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
So what kind of staff role did you guys take on?
We took on.
Admin, outreach. Pretty much
pastoral, everything. We served in pretty much every single area, and it was all free. Everything, no stipend, no pay, nothing. Here's another thing too. God, not only did we see, we didn't just leave our house. We left our business. We were making more money than we ever have. We left our business, everything.
Wow.
We gave up our savings account. It keeps going. We gave up our retirement. Here's the thing. We were proud of never being in debt. We were proud. We taught people how to get out of debt. Yes. We told people, don't do nothing in debt. We were proud of that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We told people, never touch your retirement. Never touch it. Don't even use it for investments. We would even go that far with it. Okay. Mm-hmm. We always thought God will never ask us to give up our savings. God would never ask us to give up our retirement. Right. He asked everything. Mm-hmm. We gave our retirement up. We gave away our savings. We walked away from the business. We walked away from Men Standing Positive. We had a paid staff at a point, 65 volunteers out on the streets, walked away from everything. Everything. We walked away from everything and watched everything go like this. Mm-hmm. Everything, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, we walked away.
That's more than just a piece, couple pieces of furniture.
Exactly. See, that's the thing that, that's the thing that we, you know, we didn't tell them the video we put out online, but we walked away from everything. So we had nothing. Wow. Yeah. We pretty much had nothing when we went to Minnesota.
What's that like? I have to know. Like, I mean, you say it so easy. So
No. It's not easy.
I can't believe that it was.
So
yeah.
It's the hardest thing I've ever been through, and I'm still going through it. I'm still going through it. So at first, it's almost like a high. When you do obey God, it's like a high. But then everything sets in, man. Mm-hmm. Okay, for an example, if I can be transparent with you right now, where I'm at right now. Okay, when you go to a family Christmas and a family get-together, everybody comes together and they talk about their accomplishments for that year. They talk about their house. They talk about their job, you know, and their accomplishments, and you can feel proud. Like, literally, I have no more accomplishments. I do not. I am not proud of anything because I walked away from what I was proud of. Like, I have no accomplishments. I used to be proud of my business. I used to be proud of Men Standing Positive, you know, and doing that for years and all the people we were helping. It's gone. Yeah. I walked away. Yeah. So I have nothing to be proud of besides God. Like, literally, in his, oh, that's great, brother. That's great, sister. Yeah, it is. But when the reality sets in, it's not as great as you think it is. It's really a hard thing that I'm still dealing with right now. You know what I mean? So I don't want to go around people that are like, you know, I get around Christmas and Thanksgiving and friends and family, you know, and they're just talking about their accomplishments or this, that, and all their possessions. And it's like, okay, that's cool. But it's like, I have nothing to talk about. You get what I mean? So that's really where
none of that stuff's eternal, though. What you guys are doing,
store up for yourself treasures upon, do not store up for yourself treasures upon earth, nor moth nor rust doeth corrupt, and thieves can break in and steal, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven.
Does not mean that it's not difficult. So I imagine there's some people on the other side of that money, though, who got blessed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And so to them, they're like, praise the Lord for Mike and Anna coming through with this money. Right?
Somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you give the money away, you give the furniture away, you move to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Now you're full time in the church. And then what?
Started asking God, how long are we going to be here?
Yeah.
That's literally because we're still leading our core team in discipleship, who's back in St. Louis virtually. We're in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And I started asking God, when are we leaving?
Yeah, when are we leaving?
And he literally,
it's cold.
He literally responded, when I tell you to, or when it happens, like, shut up, pretty much, you know, in the nicest way. Like,
it's like, are we there yet? Are we there yet?
And everybody's calling too. We even had a church group that we was a part, not a church group, but a church planning organization that we was a part of at the time. It was our covering, great covering.
Okay.
And, they were calling, and even friends and family were calling, like, when are you guys coming back? And we're like, we don't know. And they're like, no, seriously though, what's your timeline? We do not know. Like, people could not understand this. Mm-hmm. Like, it was very frustrating because not only are we dealing with this for real, like, this is really set in. People think it's a joke, almost, like, so but you know, when, what's your plan? And what's happening is we're losing control of our life completely. We're it's setting in that we're actually losing control of, because we had control. We had control. Yeah. And Jesus says, the only, you have to lose your own way, give up your way and give into mine.
Yeah.
And that's a process, man. And that has been a very rough process for my wife and I.
Yeah.
But right while we was there, we were serving in the church, and she starts getting these pains in her stomach. And it's so bad. One day she called and she says, hey, I can't go today. It's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got home from serving in the church that day, and she was literally curled up in the bed. She couldn't even use the restroom. I had to take her to the restroom because she was in so much pain. We didn't have insurance.
Nope.
Didn't have insurance, especially out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing was, is we had to wait to get the insurance. We had to wait like 2 weeks just to get the insurance. Finally took her to the emergency room.
Were you in pain the whole 2 weeks?
I was, so the pain started honestly when we got there, but it wasn't super severe. I would just try to sit down when I could, The pain got excruciating the week of Christmas.
Okay.
That's when it just escalated to the point where I was in bed, you know, to go to the bathroom, took everything because I was walking like my face was like where my hips are. Like that's how far I was hunched over in pain. And then we were able to get health insurance the last day you'd be eligible to sign up for, you know, 2023. And so we went to urgent care like the first or second of January of this year. Wow. So.
And so what'd they find?
So they did a CT scan. They found a mass on my colon. The urgent care nurse said, you need to go across the street to the ER right away. We get to the ER. It's in the middle of a, you know, Minnesota snowstorm. So
a real snowstorm.
It's real snow,
yeah,
right?
You keep saying that. Like, it really impacted you,
well,
that snow up there. Huh?
St. Louis has never seen anything like... St. Louis was shut the whole entire city down.
Yes.
They don't do that.
They don't do that.
Yeah.
So it's real, man. Yeah. You know, like the snow's piled up and it's you can't see while you're driving.
But school's on, work's on. Yep. You get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We found out they're
crazy.
Yeah, they only shut down for like severe blizzards or something like that.
Which,
that's what it was.
That was a severe blizzard.
It was heading that way. Yeah.
For real.
Yeah. So we went across the street to the ER. He could not stay with me because they were so packed. There were people in there choking on their own blood. Like it was very chaotic.
Yeah.
I had never been to the ER like that before. And so the fact that he had to leave, it was like, okay,
yeah.
I gotta be calm. The urgent care lady had already mentioned, hey, this could be colon cancer, which took everything in me to calm down from not freaking out because my grandfather had colon cancer. So the hospital surgeons looked at the scans that the urgent care did. The doctor came back very teary eyed. He's like, we need to take you into surgery now, meaning tonight, or you need to go back to St. Louis as fast as you can to be in network for where your policy for health insurance covers. And so we made that decision to actually go back to St. Louis at that point in time. So we spent the next day or two getting our stuff ready. And then we left when, because a couple snowstorms came in, so we waited for one to subside, and then we left on the better day.
It took us 4 hours to get out of Minnesota,
yeah,
though, because it was so bad.
Wow.
The city,
it was,
yeah,
so bad, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're sick, and you're confused, and you're,
oh, yeah,
upset,
mm-hmm,
and you're emotional, all this stuff.
We have nothing.
Yeah.
We don't have a house.
Yeah.
We don't have,
yeah,
yeah,
no money like that,
right,
no more. We don't,
yeah,
have the business. We,
right,
can't re-up.
But regardless of all that, your wife's sick, and you,
yeah,
don't know what that's going to look like in the,
yeah,
days and,
mm-hmm,
weeks ahead.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So when,
yeah,
you come to St. Louis, where are you guys staying with her parents?
We went,
okay,
to my parents.
So
is this where it turns around?
Okay.
They,
yeah,
graciously,
so,
said you can come.
Yes.
Like, it was awesome.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. But here's the thing. I went to her right before we left. I said, we're going to stay at your mom and dad's for a couple of days, but I'm going to make some moves. We're not going to stay there long. I'm not doing this, okay? And she's like, no, that's not what God said. You remember what he said. You remember what God said. There's going to be a period of time to where we were going to stay with your parents. Now, you got to understand, I was like, no, not happen. I'm not doing this. I'll make some moves. And I could have, okay? I could have,
yeah,
made some moves. I used to be a finished carpenter, so I know a lot of stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so we really could have made some moves. And she's like, no, she kept telling me, no, do not do this. Do not do this, okay? You need to submit back to God. Your attitude is horrible about this. And it was, okay? So finally, I submitted to God, and I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I did it. I was obedient, but I was not willing. Okay, so,
yeah,
we ended up getting there,
mm-hmm,
and through the process, I'll get to that in a minute, mm-hmm, but you want to tell the rest of it.
So when we got there, I had to look for a primary care doctor, which I didn't have, because a colon specialist wouldn't see me. So I finally got an appointment with a primary care doctor, and it was probably about a couple weeks' time. In that time, I asked God, why did this happen to me? Why me? I,
yeah,
eat pretty healthy, you know, all those kind of things. And he took me to the passage in John 9 where the blind man's eyes were healed, but people were saying, okay, did he sin or did his parents sin? And Jesus' response was, no, this happened to him so the works of God could be made manifest in his life. That's what God told me. He also said, it's going to get worse before it gets better, but the end is everything because your body is going to defy medical science,
yep,
when this is all said and done.
Yep.
So I'm halfway... okay, like what does worse mean? So the day before the primary care appointment happens, I come back, sit on the couch at my parents' house, and I started shaking like I have never shaken before in my life.
Like
my
she
face
was freezing
was turning
to death,
blue.
Literally.
I was just sitting there,
yeah,
like this.
Like somebody's freezing, not somebody's really, really cold. No, like they're freezing,
mm-hmm,
to death, like they're about,
mm-hmm,
to die because they're so,
mm-hmm,
cold.
Okay.
And so I was like, I'm,
yeah,
done.
Yeah.
And I called the ambulance, and the ambulance came and picked her up. And they later told us that if she would have been there for a few more hours, she could have died. Yeah. Literally right there in the living room.
When I got to the ER, my blood count was like a 5 or 6. That was the oxygen issue. And what we found out was that the tumor was very aggressive. And so it had actually punctured through it, my colon, and attached to my abdominal wall. So I was in septic shock. That's why I was shaking so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So within 12 to 24 hours without treatment, I would have died. So that night, I go into surgery. I was very nervous, but God said, you can trust this surgeon. What's crazy is that same night at the hospital, there was a colon specialist surgeon working on another person, came in and helped my ER surgeon work on me.
Yeah.
So God ended up giving me a colon specialist in a totally different way than I ever would have thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got that phone call in the middle of the night. I got that phone call in the middle of the night. Hey, there's a guy working. He was in the other room. He so happened to come in here and do this. He's working on your wife right
now. He's a God of miracles.
Yeah, it was it was something.
Yeah.
So I was in the hospital for about a week. I had to come out with a PICC line to give myself medicine for the infection and all of that stuff. It was... I have a lot of detail and remembrance of that time. It was just really rough because of the incision they had to do. It was just, you know, learning how to sit up, walk around. It was a lot of pain.
Yeah. How old were you when this happened?
This was January. So I was...
This all happened this
30,
year.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm 34, so I was 33.
Okay, so you're 33. Yeah, young to be dealing with all that. Did they call it cancer ever?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was cancer. Yeah.
It was stage 2 T4 in size. So I think that means it's almost the size of an orange, the tumor that was in my colon that they took out. And then I got appendicitis too, so they had to take out my appendix at the same time. Yeah.
All of this happened this year, bro.
Yeah, this was January of this year.
We're not even out of this year
yet. Yeah,
all of this happened this year.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been a crazy year, man. Just 1 year. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, man.
as soon as we stepped out on faith, everything, our whole life has been, God has flipped our lives completely upside down.
So we went to the oncologist. They classified the cancer. They said that the good news was all the lymph nodes they took out, they didn't find anything in my blood during surgery, but they wanted to do testing. They wanted me to do chemo right away. I refuse to do that. Basically, I went in there, no matter what they tell me, I'm not taking treatment, whether it's immunotherapy, radiation, or chemo. I'm not doing
it. And that's what the Lord told us. And what was very hard about this time period is I had pastors, preacher buddies calling me, telling me, hey, like, dude, your wife's going to die if she doesn't get chemo. I had all these saying, that's why I did not put it on social media. We didn't tell nobody. I even family members didn't even know because I could not handle the doubt. We could not handle it. So I just stopped telling people. I stopped asking people to pray because they were putting us on the gossip chain, not the prayer chain. Like it was, I was just done. So that's why we didn't tell people because of all the doubt that was being sown. And God was like, do not take chemo. Do not let them do that. No, trust me. God told us that. It's not we was just being stubborn and being churchy and, you know.
He told you both that? Like how does that conversation happen? Because I want people to understand like when God's talking to us, what does it look like?
I would say I took a lot from that word that he gave me before I ended up in there. When God speaks to me, I write it down.
Okay.
It's almost like I hear a voice inside that I know is him. Sometimes you don't want to believe it because a lot of stuff he tells you, you don't want to hear.
Yes.
But that's how it's like I hear him inside. It's literally a still small voice. Mm-hmm. That's what I hear.
It's the same. It's the same way for me.
Yeah.
But like when she got that word that God was going to heal her and he was going to take care of everything that we need to rely on him, she told me that the next morning. And that was so hard to believe. Yeah. It truly was like the hardest thing to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very hard, especially when your tests show that, hey, we cut this tumor out of you. It was an aggressive cancer. You're 33. You know, why are you not going to take treatment? Are you crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. They were selling the chemo like it was a sales pitch.
Weird.
It really was. They were trying to sell it for sure.
Yeah.
So they took it out, but they said that the chemo would help just make sure it doesn't come back. Or what's the conversation?
Because of the aggressive nature of it, that it went through my colon and went to the wall of my stomach. They said, we need to do treatment for this. They were also concerned because I was leaking. That's why I got septic. So, okay, did those cancer cells escape and go all throughout your body?
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're like, we need to deal with this. And so I started letting them do basic testing on me, but I even refused some of the cancer tests because literally inside I just had no peace about it. Like I had no, I was very unsettled. I was like, okay, do these tests. Let's start here. But regardless of what you tell me, I'm not taking treatment.
And doctors were getting upset. They were getting upset. They were getting upset and they're like, hey, you, there's no way that this is not going to come back. You have to let us do this. Mm-hmm. There's no, this is the miracle part, by the way. The miracle is not God healed the tumor. No, the tumor was taken out. Mm-hmm. The miracle was this, exactly what God said, the medical science. Basically, the cancer that she had and how she had it, there was no way that she would never have it again. There was no way. And that's what the doctors were saying.
Yeah.
You got this.
They said that I had Lynch syndrome. I had to have Lynch syndrome.
They said, so what Lynch
syndrome is a genetic predisposition to gastrointestinal cancer. So no matter what you eat, no matter how much you exercise, no matter what you do, you're getting stomach, colon, some kind of cancer. Mm-hmm. That's what they swore up and down I had based on what they saw from the tumor and all of those kind of things. I finally went to a geneticist because I was like, okay, God said I was going to defy medical science.
Yep.
So we go to the geneticist and she's doing all the stuff geneticists do. And I said, she said that genes travel in pairs. And she said the receptors in those tumors that we tested showed that all the cancer fighting genes were turned off. She said all, like, I think all three of them and there's four or something like that. It's very detailed. And I said, so what if you do this test? And I don't have Lynch syndrome. What does that make me? She said that would make you a medical anomaly.
Ah, that's what we need to hear. Right?
That's what they all said, pretty much.
So I was.
She said the word anomaly.
Anomaly. That's
the other
what
ones
she used.
Were just like they didn't even talk. They was like, that's not going to happen. So let's not even talk about that. Let's deal with this issue.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
She at least put a word on it and was like, well, you know, you'll be an anomaly. Like this, that doesn't happen.
And so they did the test, came back, no Lynch syndrome whatsoever. The thing that they tried to hang on was that, okay, well, genetic testing isn't, you know, as developed as it could be. You know, we could just be missing something. Or the other thing, they did find a gene that said you were potentially predisposed to having polyps in your colon, which could lead to colon cancer. Well, I had a colonoscopy. The colonoscopy was beautiful. There was no polyps to be found.
Squeaky clean.
So every time, like, they test me routinely. I have CT scans. I have all these things. I'm always clear.
Ha.
100%.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So how do you guys like celebrate? I mean, what do you guys, how do you even imagine getting a phone call like this where you're an anomaly and you're like, God did it. Like, cause I can't imagine. I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, Mike, where my wife is sick. She's just had emergency surgery basically. And they're, all these doctors are coming in the room and they're saying, you know what? The end of the world is here.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get right with this. You need to get on these medicines. You need to just do whatever we say because otherwise you're going to lose your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I'm thinking, well, I don't want to lose my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got all these people telling me what to do. And I don't know nothing. I'm not no doctor or nothing like that. So it's like, it's hard for me to lean into what you guys did. But if you're hearing from God, and you've got the faith and you've got the trust and you've got a word to stand on like you guys had, which is that you're going to be an anomaly, it makes it different, but it cannot be easy.
No,
cannot.
No. And we had to have a conversation. We had to have a conversation because when she's going through all this, she couldn't really talk. She wasn't even there like a lot. And me and her was not, I'm dealing with all this junk I'm dealing with too, about living with her mom and dad and stuff. Like it was rough and it's just happening.
Yeah.
There is no time to think. There is no time. It's just happening, right? Yeah. Well, finally, we got some time to talk, and I was like, hey, are we standing on this? Are we really in agreement with God said? We had to have that talk. It wasn't just like, oh, we agreed. No. We had to have an actual conversation like, what are we doing? Are we going to rely on what the doctors say, or are we going to rely on what God says? Because once we go, there is no turning back. Because family, friends, people are like, what are you doing? You're playing with your life here.
Yeah.
You can't not make this decision. We were refusing things. Doctors are coming in with things and we're saying no. And families are like, what are you doing? No, 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 no. Don't say no to that. We're looking crazy.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? And so we had to come in agreement like, okay, we're going to ride this thing out. We're going to trust God. And so once we made that decision, it was no turning back, man. It was what it was. We made the decision.
Right.
So whether if we was in faith or not, we made the decision to trust. But it
can't make your relationships that much. I mean, so it had to put a strain on relationships, right? Like your
parents, absolutely.
Right? They're like, what are you doing?
Probably well, her good. Parents were in agreement with a lot.
Good.
They were in agreement with a lot. It was more of
church people. Sounds like
yes, and then family. Yeah. And then family was like, you guys are nuts.
Yeah. There was a group of people who was for it, a group of people who were against it. So it's kind of like we had two sides. We had, and the, even the people who were against it were still supportive. They were just like, "What are you doing?"
Her mother and father were probably more supportive than anybody.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. And God said that. He was like, I'm going to put faith in their hearts. We didn't know who they was. Mm-hmm. Well, we found out that it was her mom and dad.
Yeah.
That he put he did put faith in their heart.
Yeah.
So when's the last time you had any sort of treatment, or not treatment because you guys did, but any time, but when's the last time you went to the doctor and
September.
Heard? Yeah. Okay. So, and they were like, you're all good.
Yep.
Huh?
Yep.
Yep. They even took me off of, so at the oncologist, they have like current cancer patients and, you know, people who are just under observation. They took me off of that current list. Now they've put me on just like the back burner. Like, okay,
let's go.
You come
let's
in
go.
Every like 6 months or every year or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So.
It's just like a checkup.
Yep. Yeah. Pretty much.
Make sure you're okay.
Yeah.
Move on.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that is awesome.
I'll just keep getting observed. And I'm not going to lie. Every time I wait for a test, it's like, okay, it's still going to be that way. Right. Yeah. Like I have that temptation to fear. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, what has happened every single time?
Yep.
You know, what has happened?
Yeah. And when we got the call, it's on tape because you asked, like, what was your expression? We literally have that on tape. I don't know if you've seen our
videos. Yes, I saw some of your Instagram videos or your TikToks or whatever they are.
Yeah, we have it on tape, like when the doctor called.
Yeah.
So if anybody's interested, go find those things again. Tell them what your Instagram handle is so they can go find your videos.
Pass the mic, PAZTUH, Mike. Yeah. And then you can do the same thing on Facebook.
It's smart to.
It's across.
Yeah, it's smart to try and capture those moments. At the same time, it's like, it's a little self-serving, but it's like, I want, because that's the thing with people. Like, I believe it when I see it. Let me show you what God is doing in the moment.
Exactly.
He's healing my wife. This thing has happened. We're believing for this. We've been standing on this word because that's going to activate somebody's faith.
Yeah, we have it documented.
Yeah, I know.
We have
it's
documented.
Awesome.
Yeah, we do.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. I would say too, and I do share this when I tell people this story, when I was getting all those diagnoses and everything, I never once put the word my in front of the diagnosis.
Don't declare it. Yeah.
Don't own it. Don't declare it. And so it is very tempting because it's like you want to take that in as part of your identity, but that is something I refuse to do because I was always like, that's the tumor. That's the cancer.
Yeah.
I never said my this, my that, because I would have owned it at that point and I was not about to take that.
Yeah. One of our biggest questions to God was, is why all of this? It wasn't just that. It was like, why all of this? And I kept asking God. Remember when I said that I was obedient, but I wasn't willing. And the Bible says, if you're willing and obedient, you shall eat of the good of the land. I had a bad attitude throughout this whole process when we first got back because I wanted to make a move to get out of that situation, out of her mom and dad's house. And God was not speaking to me until I started to be willing. And I asked him for so long. I was like, why did you do this? Why did you have to do this? Why? What did I do wrong? And finally, the Lord came to me and he told the both of us pretty much. He says, it's nothing you did wrong. It's what you did right. He said, do not take this personal. This is kingdom. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the deal. I still didn't understand what he meant by that. That's all he told me. Well, we have been on a long journey with this discipleship program. We are going different churches, and we have a discipleship program to where basically we're teaching people how to become true disciples. When, in order for you to become a true disciple, you have to be willing to do what the disciples did. Mm-hmm. So I can preach and teach that to you all day, but can I do what they actually did? And so the level that God has called us to disciple others, my wife and I had to go through and give everything up. Mm-hmm. And so for me to be in that situation, and that's what God has shown me of why he did that, was my worst fears, bro. One of my worst fears was to have to make the decision to do that. That's the thing. Like, people don't understand. Like, we didn't have to stay there. We didn't have to.
Yeah.
I could have made a decision not to. It's like David, he could, he was bad, you know, but he said, wait. Wait, I'm gonna wait on the Lord. I'm gonna wait on the Lord before I go win this other battle, you know? And so that is why we have been through everything that we're still going through.
Yeah.
Is so we can relate on the level that we're teaching discipleship right now.
So is that the next steps for you guys? I mean, you said you're trying to build a church. You don't know what the season looks like for that, but doing discipleship classes, like, so, because it sounds like you got a clean bill of health. Like, what's the next steps for you guys? You know?
Yeah. So right now we've been traveling, doing ministry, going churches, preaching the kingdom, and I call it intro to discipleship.
Right.
And we're still building our discipleship curriculum. But when we launched this discipleship curriculum, it's amazing. God gave my wife a word. at one of our launch meetings, our God said, I'm going to give you a discipleship program like your evangelism. Remember, we teach churches on how to do street evangelism. Mm-hmm. God said, I'm going to give you a discipleship program that's like your evangelism. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Long story short, he's doing that. We're still in the process of it. But if you go, all the churches we go, the number one area that churches are struggling is discipleship. It's not even evangelism. I thought it was evangelism for years. No, yeah. It's discipleship. Mm-hmm. It's real discipleship. A lot of people say, well, no, we got a discipleship program. It's actually a life coaching program. Like right. Usually what we call a discipleship program is Jimmy's smoking crack. Jimmy doesn't have a job. Jimmy doesn't have good credit. Jimmy's not married. Mm-hmm. Jimmy doesn't have a house. Let's help Jimmy get a house. Let's help Jimmy get a car. Let's help him get a job and get off drugs. Oh, he just graduated discipleship. We got the certificate. That is not discipleship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is not discipleship.
That's sanctification. That's just getting free of sin. That's all it is.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, it's I call it life coaching. Yeah. We do that in our mentor program for Men Standing Positive. I've been doing that for years, you know, and I learned I was not discipling people. Right. That's not what we were doing. But what God has given us, he's given us this program, and he promised us that we were going to launch it, not only with our church, but to the nation, pretty much.
Okay.
That every church would be able to implement this discipleship program. And so everything that my wife and I have been going through, and when I say going through, we're not done. Like, this is done. Still, we're still in this, bro. We're homeless. My wife,
really?
My wife calls us nomads.
We're nomads.
Oh, I like that word better. I like that word
better. I know, that's what I like too.
Yeah. Well, homeless means you don't have a home. That's it. Now we may be homeless, but we don't have a homeless mindset. Jesus was homeless, but he did not have a homeless mindset.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. We don't have a homeless mindset. But we are definitely.
So you're all in on the things you just described. Like, we're not going back to the job. We're not doing finishing carpenter or none of that stuff.
We haven't been doing that. I haven't done that for a long time because we had a business. I have a business and stuff, and God has gradually given that back to us.
Okay.
He is. But it's what he said. If you read in Luke, and after he talks about the rich young ruler, Peter steps in and says, well, we've given up everything for you. And Jesus says, those that have given up mother, father, wives, things will be repaid in this life. And the next. So yeah, I truly believe that God, that's the next testimony we're going to be telling people, is that, hey, yeah, we may have given everything up, but God is going to give it back. And that's why he says, seek thee first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these other things will be added unto you. It's funny because Jesus warned us. He literally warned us, hey, whatever you seek before my kingdom, you're going to have to give it up before you enter. And it's like, he warned us. He told us that structure. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's where my wife and I, like, the scriptures have just, like, come to pass in our life. They're so real to us in a way that they never were before.
Yeah. And he's not only are you hearing from him, but you have the testimony of him answering what you guys have been sharing with other people and documenting the whole thing, man. So, you know, if I was still a bad man, I'd be like, well, watch what they're doing. Whatever they're saying right now is probably going to come to pass, you know, because it seems like they're hearing from God and obeying, you know, because it's hard to obey. That's the hardest thing is that, you know, our fruit comes from our obedience. You
that's
know what
right.
I'm saying? So if we're not hearing from God, it's hard to obey him. So get in a relationship where you're hearing from God. And when he talks to you, listen to it.
Do it. Be not only hearers of the word, but doers of it. Yes. And I wake up, I'm going to be honest with you, I wake up sometimes and I'm like, I'll tell her, I'm like, I'm not doing this. I'm done. Like, and I really think I'm going to quit, but I don't. Mm-hmm. And I just, that's what my prayer request is from everybody is, man, just pray that we stay the course because man, I could change that. We could change things in our own strength. Yeah. We really could change things in our own strength. And man, it's just hard to, the biggest thing is losing control of your life, man.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I love structure. I love systems. I love organization. I love, Ann and I are the kings and queens of that, you know? And so that is gone. Mm-hmm. Like, that is gone, man, for real. We have no idea where we're going. Mm-hmm. We have to wait on the Lord. And not only that, people have joined us. That's the crazy thing. We have a team that has joined us in this journey. This is not just her and I.
Yeah.
So what's the team? What are you guys doing as a team?
Well, we're traveling missionaries preaching the kingdom of God.
They're coming with you.
They already have. We're out on the road.
Yeah.
So, but it's not, they've left everything too.
Yes.
They have the same story.
Yeah.
It just looks a little different. Yeah. And it's like, oh, because people said to her, well, if you guys had kids, it'd be different. Well, we got two couples that are on the road with us full time. They have two children.
Yeah.
One of them's on the road with us all the time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's my goddaughter. But it's like, that's what I'm saying is, God is now, because when we first started this, I'm like, God, ain't nobody gonna want to hear this. I said, I'm not preaching this. Mm-hmm. I said, nobody's gonna do this. And I was like, I don't even think I'm going to do this. And he said, here's the deal. Obey me and you will do it. Well, I didn't know what he was talking about. He said, you will do it. And not only that, there will be people that follow. And that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
People are crazy. People are following us.
Well, I think when Jesus gets in somebody, it becomes a light. It becomes an attraction for people to want to follow.
Yes.
You know, because when people are on fire for God and you're seeing the fruit of them, their obedience and their faith, mm-hmm. that can be, really, because faith is a big thing for people. I mean, this our whole structure around Jesus says we got to have faith in Jesus, faith to do what he's asking us to do, even if it's hard, even if it's giving up everything, even if it's believing that we don't need treatment for a cancer that we didn't expect to happen when we were 30, you know, like whatever that faith is, you know, when people hear when you've got a lot of people saying that about the different parts of the things you've done in your life, hey, we're walking by faith, baby, because if I've got my people who I work, if John's still saved in a year, you know, it's like, then those kinds of stories are the ones that move the needle. I think when it draws people to the kingdom of heaven, talk about kingdom, you know, the king can say, I'm king all he wants, but sometimes you need a follower of the king to be like, look what happened to me.
Yep.
This is why I'm following him.
Yep.
For it to be, you know, a help to somebody. So, man, what an awesome story. Yeah. Tell people how to connect with you guys online, or if you want to shout out anything you guys got coming up.
Yeah, so if you want to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of that stuff, YouTube, it's Pastor Mike, P-A-Z-T-U-H, Mike. And then I have the website, PastorMike.com, P-A-Z-T-U-H, once again, Mike.com. And then my wife, Anna Elizabeth.
Yeah, so my pages are Anna Elizabeth. So it's Anna and then Elizabeth with an S, not a Z.
With an S.
We don't like that Z. I was kidding. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on to the show today. I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us. Thank you for having us.
What a story. What a story. All right, guys, we'll have all the links in the description if you want to check out anything they got going on or coming up. Until next time, we pray you discover a future and a hope for your life today. We ain't trying to blend in. If you're ready, come on with us, my friend. Come on. We can change the world. Hey, hey. Let's go. What changes the world? The only thing that ever really changes the world is when somebody gets the idea that love can abound and can be shared.